The Solid Monster sounds off.
Hulk Hogan has definitely been that rocket fuel that TNA needed.
This doesn't make any sense.
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
He's fat! You haven't been beat up properly! Woo!
Welcome to episode 297 of the Solid Monster Sounds Off, exclusively on the SolidMonster.com, Stitcher Radio, and in iTunes. It is Bound for Glory Sunday, October 20th, 2013. I am the Solid Monster. TNA's biggest pay-per-view of the year. It is their WrestleMania, their Super Bowl, their World Series, Stanley Cup, all that crap rolled into one. And we have a lot to talk about when it comes to TNA. A lot of different things, and we'll get to that later on in the show in its usual spot. Got some house cleaning to get out of the way here first. First of all, I have a new column up on LayfieldReport.com. This one concerning the World Heavyweight Championship, why the World Heavyweight title in WWE has to go. The time has come. A lot of different reasons why the world title, quite frankly, just doesn't need to be around anymore. Chief among them is this ongoing feud that we have for the WWE title between Daniel Bryan and Randy Orton over who the face of WWE is. Who is the face of the company? And clearly they're positioning whoever the WWE champion is as the face of the company. That doesn't speak very well to the World Heavyweight title when the face of your company is the guy holding the other belt. So there's that, this idea that John Cena can come back, his first match back, and automatically get a shot at the World Heavyweight title. The way they've treated Alberto Del Rio, I bring up that whole Raw back in July when John Cena was going to select his SummerSlam opponent, and there's Del Rio, the world champ on stage, you know, standing there shoulder to shoulder with the likes of Zack Ryder and Tons of Funk, all these different reasons. I talk about that and a unification plan and where it should happen, what the best place and the best time is to finally, after all these years, just merge the two. Unify the championships, make it into a big deal, a big spectacle, and just be done with it. Because the world title is probably the single most useless piece of fake gold in that entire company right now. That includes the U.S. title and the Intercontinental title, which also have been treated very poorly. Curtis Axel has not exactly made the Intercontinental title mean something, and I don't think the title's made him mean much more either. So you can head over to JBL's website right now, LayfieldReport.com. Check it out. You'll see my name on the right-hand side amongst all the other authors in the little chart there. Click it, read this column, read past columns, and let me know if you agree. Some people may disagree and think that John Cena is going to come in like the White Knight next weekend, win the title, and make it mean something again. That's all well and good, but even if he does, I think we all know that the world title, you know, 3 months later is going to be right back where it was before. Big thank you to everybody who checked out my Triple H DVD review up on YouTube, Thy Kingdom Come. There's a 45-minute review of the DVD up on our official YouTube channel. My username is The Solid Monster, all one word. If you're not subscribed to us on there, please subscribe to us. My thanks to everybody who left comments. Hopefully you guys got something out of it or were entertained by it. If you like these Sound Off extras, the best way to keep supporting the show and supporting these extra episodes is to make a PayPal donation to the Sound Off. You can do that on the SolidMonster.com right-hand side, little PayPal donate box. Give whatever you can. Every little bit helps. Because I do these, you know, as I have free time. There will be additional episodes in the future. I'll be reviewing things. I'll be reviewing events. I may even be able to do one next Monday, the day after the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view. And the post-pay-per-view Sound Off extras, which I know you guys love, this will not be an every month thing. There will not be one after Survivor Series and all the other shows. I happen to have some free time this month, and we'll do a show next week, hopefully if I can, the Monday after. But I will not necessarily be doing these after every pay-per-view, so enjoy them while they last. But there will be additional ones, and again, if you want to keep supporting the show, the best way to do it is by PayPal. I want to say thank you to Nick Terry and Nathan Woods, two of our listeners who made donations this week. And buy a shirt, if you want, in the Solid Monster Sound Off Superstore, solidmonster.spreadshirt.com. We have a bunch of shirts up, also now in 3XL size. We ship internationally, so check that out. One thing you will not find in the Sound Off Superstore, and I am very proud to say that, are these Topps trading cards. You hear about this, Topps has this new set of WWE trading cards that are built around the greatest champions in company history. Somebody sent this to me the other day, and I read this and I laughed. I just laughed, because what other reaction could you possibly have to this? They have a list of the top 10 greatest WWE champions in history. So apparently they're not saying, oh, just in the last 5 years, 10 years, you know, modern era. This is top 10 champions in history. This is the list that the Topps Trading Card Company put out here. John Cena, Triple H, The Rock, The Undertaker, CM Punk, Sheamus, Brock Lesnar, Eddie Guerrero, The Miz, and JBL. According to Topps, those are your top 10 greatest WWE champions of all time. No Bruno, no Hogan, no Brett, no Shawn Michaels, which was actually quite surprising. You'd think they'd fit him in there. No Steve Austin, which automatically disqualifies this list from any sort of serious consideration. I'm not even going to get into having The Miz on any list of top. You can make a list of the top 30 greatest WWE champions of all time, and The Miz's name would not even come anywhere near that list. So they have the top 10 greatest Intercontinental Champions list with... This is even better, I think. Yeah, you got names on there like Randy Orton, and they put Christian on there, and Kofi Kingston, Dolph Ziggler. But they've got Santino Marella, they've got Ezekiel Jackson. I don't even remember Ezekiel Jackson holding the Intercontinental title, but apparently he did, I guess, on SmackDown. No Chris Jericho, even though he has more Intercontinental titles than anyone in history. And if they're doing a list of current names, you'd think they'd put Jericho in there. It's not like Jericho's an old guy. You know, he's been around. They have a top 10 world heavyweight champions list with Daniel Bryan on it, but not Edge. Top 10 greatest tag teams list with names like Zack Ryder and Curt Hawkins, Primo and Epico, or is it Fernando and Diego? I forget. The Miz and Big Show, Ted DiBiase and Cody Rhodes. So I assume it was some 7-year-old who put this list together. I remember Jim Ross mentioning that he was working on this Topps trading card project for WWE. I hope to God that he wasn't working on these lists and he was only working on maybe some biographical info on the individual wrestlers. I can't imagine that somebody like Jim Ross would put this kind of list together. Let's just assume they're sticking to the current generation. They're gearing it towards kids. Even a list geared towards kids, that's the best you can do. Yeah, I'm proud to say we don't have any Topps trading cards in our Sound Off Superstore. Let's run through Monday Night Raw here, this past Monday night from St. Louis, Missouri. The good, the bad, and the ugly. Got some random Raw observations and some thoughts on the editorial that Mark Madden posted over on WrestleZone earlier this week. I've got some thoughts on that at the end here. This really wasn't that good of a show, I didn't think, Monday night, up until the main event. It opened with Shawn Michaels coming out for an interview, and he referred to the finish of the last pay-per-view as a crock. A crock, you say? That's a polite way to put it. Largely the same interview he gave the week before, only this time he was confronted by Randy Orton, who threatened him if he tried to screw him. He went for an RKO. HBK countered with an attempted super kick, but Orton bailed outside. He ends up getting attacked by The Miz, looking for revenge. And dare I say, good babyface fire here from The Miz. You don't hear me complimenting him as a babyface very often, but I have to call it as I see it. I thought that his attack on Orton here was pretty good. Wyatt family ended up putting the screws to Miz here. He and Orton had an okay match. Miz was about to put Orton, I believe, in the figure four. Lights went out. Wyatt family was on stage. They distracted The Miz, which allowed for Orton to hit him with an RKO, get the pin. Bray Wyatt, who is out of action, he's got a deep calf bruise. He sat in his rocking chair. He cut a promo on Miz, telling him he's going to put him down. Sadly, Miz's dad took one look at him in the delivery room after he was born and told the doctor the same thing. It's actually quite a sad story. I actually think Miz's dad should join the Wyatt family. I think he'd fit right in. Kane. Let me bring up Kane here. Remember him? He's that big guy with the mask. We last saw him being kidnapped by the Wyatt family at SummerSlam. He has wrapped up filming on See No Evil 2. He's already being advertised for house shows early next month. I believe he's supposed to work a match against Bray Wyatt at Survivor Series. That had been the idea. I don't know if that changes now. If you know, Bray Wyatt is hurt, if they were going to do him and The Miz at Hell in a Cell, which I assume they're no longer going to do. If they think they can get around his injury, I guess maybe they could do it. But I don't know what changes now that Wyatt is hurt. If they can't do that Miz match like they originally planned, maybe that gets pushed back to Survivor Series instead of the Kane match. I don't know. But Kane will be back soon. Paul Heyman had a segment with Brad Maddox where Maddox made a beat-the-clock challenge with Ryback against R-Truth and CM Punk against Curtis Axel. Whoever wins their respective match in the fastest time would get to choose the stipulation. for the Punk Ryback match at Hell in a Cell. Meanwhile, on commentary, Michael Cole talked about Xavier Woods from NXT starting an online petition to get Big Show back his job. Why Xavier Woods would even care whether or not Big Show is employed was not explained. I guess he's just a really swell guy. JBL pretended to have absolutely no idea who Xavier Woods is, even though JBL is the general manager for NXT. Not to mention that Xavier Woods has appeared on JBL's YouTube show before. If this is their way of calling Woods up to the main roster, I think that's great, but there are other guys, and girls too, who I would call up before Xavier Woods. It was at this point in the show that I actually got a text from somebody telling me that last week's episode of The Walking Dead, which was good, by the way, for those of you who watch, a little slow, but I have a feeling that everything's going to pretty much go straight to hell on tonight's show. I got a text telling me that the premiere last weekend did 16 million viewers. 16 million. That's better than most broadcast shows do. As one of my Twitter followers pointed out, that's like 16 episodes of Impact. And the Talking Dead show that comes on right after kept over 5 million of those viewers. So just like last season, the show where they talk about the show that just ended did more viewers than Monday Night Raw. Well over a million viewers, in fact. I'm still waiting for that Did You Know fact to pop up on TV. Triple H and Stephanie came out. She said they're selling Big Show's house. They're pressing charges against him for what he did to her husband the week before. She referenced Michael Cole's reporting that Triple H suffered a concussion and needed to have his jaw wired shut after Big Show's knockout punch. Why the hell couldn't Big Show knock the guy out years ago? Would have saved us a lot of 20-minute promos. Triple H finally spoke. He said, "Rumors of my demise have been greatly exaggerated." Last week, he hit his breaking point. "I guess after all we've done, we are the villains." And he said, "Fine, I'll be the bad guy." Daniel Bryan's music hit. He walked out, started chanting "Yes" over and over again. And in fact, that's all he did was chant "Yes." Alberto Del Rio attacked him from behind, laid him out with a kick to the head. Stephanie then announced that Del Rio would be Bryan's opponent later in the show. We got a commercial hyping John Cena's return at Hell in a Cell. Multiple commercials, in fact. I think it's absolutely hilarious that they showed a syringe in one of these ads for John Cena's big comeback. That's brazen right there. It also explains a lot. We also got a commercial for the new Goldberg DVD. 8 hours of Goldberg matches on 3 discs. And that doesn't even include a documentary. For the first half of his career, he never had a match that went longer than 6 minutes. I find this impossible that they could fill this DVD set with 8 hours of nothing but Goldberg matches. Ryback beat Truth in the Beat the Clock Challenge. Time to beat, 5 minutes 44 seconds. I did like how when the bell rang, R-Truth immediately ducked out of the ring to kill time, and Ryback had to chase him. I thought that was very clever, but if Ryback was pressed for time, why not just let R-Truth get counted out? You know, he's going to have to try to come back in within 10 seconds, right? Just grab him then. Not too bright, this Ryback dude. CM Punk beat Curtis Axel in the other Beat the Clock Challenge just in the nick of time, so Punk gets to choose the stipulation for Hell in a Cell. He said he wants Ryback and Paul Heyman in a handicap match inside the Hell in a Cell. So for the second year in a row, Punk and Ryback will be locked inside the cell. I hope it ends better for Ryback's sake this time. On SmackDown this week, they pulled the trigger on the Big E Langston babyface turn. He lost to CM Punk in a match. Paul Heyman came out with Ryback and Curtis Axel. They were overwhelming Punk. They attacked him. All of a sudden, Langston came to Punk's aid. He took out Curtis Axel. And this was after Paul Heyman had made a derogatory remark congratulating Punk on beating some NXT rookie. And in the end, Langston was asking Heyman, "Who's the rookie now?" So we'll see if they let him use the 5-count gimmick that got over big in NXT. I think it's a positive thing. I mean, Big E Langston hasn't even been on TV for weeks and weeks. I see these stories about how it has to do with John Cena being off TV. He and Cena are very tight. They're good friends. Probably a big reason Langston was even getting a push before is because John Cena was going to bat for him, and Cena disappears, and so does Big E Langston. So it's more than a coincidence, and now Cena is back, or will be back shortly. Langston's back on TV. I say good. I say good because I think Big E as a babyface has a lot of potential. I think it sucks that they ended his little program there with Dolph Ziggler without any real conclusion, and they broke him up with AJ. I thought the Langston-AJ pairing was kind of interesting. But if they actually do something with the guy and he gets over and he does the five-count gimmick, I say good. I'm a fan of Biggie Langston. I think he can be a hell of a lot bigger than he is now. Not physically. Physically, I don't think he can possibly get much bigger. I mean, in terms of his star. Tamina Snuka beat Brie Bella. Divas Stopwatch had this at 4 minutes, 28 seconds. They've been on an upswing the past few weeks. I guess we'll see if this is the start of a trend or just a fluky thing. AJ has been cleared after her concussion. She locked Brie and the Black Widow after the match. Bryan and Del Rio had a long match. A long match. It was a good match, but a little boring in spots. It's hard for me to get into a lot of Alberto Del Rio's matches. He's a good wrestler, and he's a stiff worker, too. You know, his offense is very believable when he kicks you and the submissions and everything. I feel like I should like the guy more than I do, but I don't know. He's about as exciting as fucking paint chips. I just can't explain why. Match ended when Randy Orton popped up on the Titantron. He was walking into the trainer's room where the Bellas were, and when he closed the door, we suddenly heard screaming. Del Rio tried for a roll-up. Bryan kicked out. Then he kicked Del Rio in the head and ran to the back to save his girlfriend. And John Cena's girlfriend, too, I guess. What a swell guy. When Bryan entered the room, Orton was nowhere to be found until he suddenly nailed Bryan from behind, left him laying. Brie couldn't let him know that Orton was behind him. She couldn't be like, hey, look out, behind you. That was dumb. The Bellas can't act, by the way. They're horrible. Absolutely horrific. Main event was Cody and Goldust against the Shield for the tag team titles. Good match. Not as good as their pay-per-view match until the last few minutes when things really picked up. And by the end, it turned into a great match. The crowd, which had been pretty quiet early on, was chanting, "This is awesome," by the end. And deservedly so. There was a spot in here where Seth Rollins had Cody Rhodes up for a powerbomb on the outside of the ring. And he just launched him into the barricade. Just brutal impact, and a hush fell over the crowd. It looked so bad. And I say bad in a painful kind of way. It was no DQ. Goldust brought a chair in to save Cody later on from the triple powerbomb. Then he dropped it to throw Ambrose out of the ring. That's when Roman Reigns grabbed the chair and used it on Goldust. Reigns was great here. He started mocking Goldust over him, you know, dropping the chair. "Don't ever drop the chair," he said, which is sound advice, by the way. If you bring a chair in the ring, don't drop it and let the other guy pick it up. The action eventually spilled outside. Reigns speared Goldust through the barricade where the ring announcer sits. They brought Cody back into the ring to finish him off when all of a sudden, the fired Big Show emerges like a sea monster out of the crowd and single-handedly takes out every member of the Shield. He delivers a knockout punch to Roman Reigns in the ring, allows Cody to get the pin. We have new tag team champions for the first time since May. Place went nuts. Triple H ran down. He went nuts too, but not in a very happy way. Big Show retreated back into the crowd, started doing Daniel Bryan's yes chant. I'm a bit disturbed at all the jobs that the Shield has been doing of late. These guys went undefeated for months, and now all of a sudden they're racking up losses like Zack Ryder. They lost at Battleground. They lost here. They lost again on SmackDown in a six-man tag against Bryan, Cody, and Goldust. Plus, now they're taking orders. Yeah, you know, it's like if Triple H says jump, they ask how high. They're hardly the rebels that they were before. But that aside, this was awesome. A fun way to end what I would say otherwise was a pretty uneventful show. If you missed the rest of Raw, you didn't miss much. And most importantly, though, the thing about this main event, Cody Rhodes main evented Raw and picked up a big win. So good for him. Now, I want to take a few moments here to just address something that was written by Mark Madden this week. Mark Madden, you may know him as the former announcer on WCW Monday Nitro. He actually worked for WCW for a number of years on their hotline doing other things. Has written for newspapers before, sports columnist and all that stuff. Let me just say, I'm not a Mark Madden fan. I never really cared for the guy. These days, when he writes something, it's almost always negative. Just, I think, for the sake of being negative. I think of him as the Phil Mushnick of pro wrestling writers, and believe me, that's not a compliment. That said, I read his column on Daniel Bryan and WWE's main event storyline right now. And I wanted to comment on it because after Raw was over on Monday night, one thing that hit me was what a poor job WWE has done of adding depth to the Daniel Bryan character. The guy may not have the gift of gab the way that CM Punk does. I'm not saying he's going to pick up the mic and drop any pipe bombs or anything like that, but he's a good talker when you let him speak and he gets going. He's a good promo. He's really good. And there are people who will say, well, why is it WWE's fault that they haven't added depth to the character? Isn't that up to Daniel Bryan? And it is. The problem is he goes out there and does what he's told to do. It's not like they say, okay, you've got 5 minutes or 10 minutes to go out there and cut a promo. They're saying, okay, when you come out, all you're going to do is stand there and point in the air and chant yes. So that's what he does. So in that respect, no, it's not his fault. It's up to them to put him in a position where he can actually speak like a normal person. And it seems like, for the most part, every single week, all they do is have him come out and shout, yes! And I'd like to think that if Daniel Bryan had the freedom to do so, he'd like to say more than just one word. The Daniel Bryan that we saw a few weeks ago when he ran out to attack Randy Orton, remember? Hurled him over the announce table, then he beat him up some more. He was so unhinged, they needed a bunch of referees and agents just to keep him off Randy Orton. That's the Daniel Bryan we need to see more of. So when Mark Madden says, oh, they've ruined him, they've ruined Daniel Bryan, that's kind of the point of the whole column. He says they blew it with him. I disagree. I think in spite of all the insults, constantly referring to the guy as a troll, pointing out how he's small, what a small guy he is, all of his flaws, he's still over. And it's not just the yes chant. I really believe the crowd loves Daniel Bryan. They want to get behind him. He's easy to like. He's this underdog character they can get behind. So even without the one word, they would still be behind him. They would still be into him. He's still one of the best in the world in terms of actually putting on a show in the ring. If the crowd isn't into something, you give that guy 10 minutes and he'll have them jumping up and down. Not everybody can do that. He's not ruined. But they're sure not doing him any favors by turning him into a gimmick. And there's nothing wrong with having multiple baby faces who the crowd can get behind. But the Big Show, and I think Big Show has done a really great job in this role. Forget all the crying bullshit. I just think him doing what they've asked of him and expressing emotion with his face and stuff like that, he's fucking awesome. There's very few people better than Big Show when it comes to that. But there's no reason Big Show should be the focal point of these shows. That's 2 weeks in a row now. 2 weeks ago, the show ended with him knocking out Triple H. Then Daniel Bryan snuck in after the fact, like an afterthought. And what did he do? Of course. Yes, yes, yes. This past week, it's Big Show again. Comes out of the crowd like Steve Austin back in the day to fuck with the McMahons. It reminded me of when Austin ran down to help Mankind beat Rock for the title on Raw, and the place went nuts. So, second week in a row now, Big Show ends the show as the focal point. Why? Why is Big Show out there doing the yes chant in the crowd? Why is everybody suddenly jacking Bryan's line? It should be him out there in the crowd doing that. The way these guys are positioned, it almost has to end with Big Show winning the title. I don't think he will, but if it were anybody else in his position, you'd think they were the main guy. I assume this all leads to Triple H against Big Show in a match at Survivor Series, and I wonder what gets top billing on that show. Is it Bryan in the WWE title, or is it Triple H and Big Show? 2 years ago, it was Triple H and CM Punk who got top billing on that Night of Champions pay-per-view. John Cena beat Del Rio in the championship match, second from the top. We'll see if history repeats itself. So, I mean, I'm still happy that Daniel Bryan's getting a main event push. It's been a couple of months now. You know, we have another pay-per-view coming up next weekend. He's in the main event with Randy Orton. Shawn Michaels is the ref. That's all great. I don't think anybody deserves it more. He's easy to root for. So I'm enjoying the ride while it lasts, but it kills me to say it. There is some truth to what Mark Madden is saying, but he's not ruined. Okay, the sky is not falling. They just need to make up their minds. Who do you want as your top guy? Is it John Cena? You want John Cena to be your top guy? You're too afraid to go with anybody else? Fine. If not, and Daniel Bryan's your guy, then you need to treat him like the man, not man B or man C. Rey Mysterio returned to action for the first time since March at the WWE show in Guadalajara, Mexico on Thursday. He tagged with the returning Sin Cara against Alberto Del Rio and the returning Wade Barrett, who's back after being stuck in the UK with visa issues. Mysterio and Sin Cara won the match. I saw a video of the finish. Mysterio nailed Del Rio with a 619, and Sin Cara did a senton off the top rope. I'm not going to make a joke about how Sin Cara missed about 98% of Del Rio with this senton. I'll leave that to Brian Bird on Facebook since he seems to enjoy that so much. By the way, for those who have asked previously about the whereabouts of Junico, he wrestled on that Guadalajara show against Tyson Kidd. So he is, in fact, still around. There's two other quick items I pulled from this week's Wrestling Observer newsletter I thought were interesting that I want to mention here. The first is this little statistic on sponsorships. In 2008, WWE's total revenue from corporate sponsorships was $7.4 million. Now, you might ask, why? Who cares? Well, after 5 years of PG and all the promises they made to their sponsors, that number is expected to hit $20 million at the end of this year. That right there is the biggest reason why PG is here to stay and John Cena is not turning heel. No matter how hard you click your heels together and wish for it to happen, it ain't going to happen. And also, the other little news bit here, Triple H has reportedly made it a priority to focus on tag teams. He wants some teams ready down at NXT to bring up to the main roster. He also wants to take guys that are already on the main roster with no real direction, a guy like a Tyson Kidd or a Justin Gabriel, and put them together in makeshift teams, since they're obviously not going to be doing anything with them as singles guys. I'm no fan of makeshift teams. I've made that clear before. But if you have one or two makeshift tag teams, and then let's say you bring up the Ascension from NXT, you've already got the Shield, the Wyatts, Primetime Players, the Usos, the Rhodes Brothers, the Matadors, 3MB, you could have a really robust tag team division. They've got a lot of teams there. They just have to do a better job of building them up. And, you know, we always need fresh teams. The Matadors aren't really fresh. They're just two guys that have been repackaged in a different gimmick with a little midget. So they're a nice attraction, but I think what we need are real teams. The Ascension on Raw would be different because we haven't seen them on Raw before. They're a fresh tag team. So I'm in favor of that. I'm a big fan of tag team wrestling. I still remember back in the late 90s when WCW was on fire and the Monday Night Wars were still going on. I think Eric Bischoff maybe did an interview or I don't remember what was said exactly, but Bischoff was all but ready to do away with tag team wrestling in WCW. He didn't think that tag team wrestling drew anymore. He thought it was this old, dated concept. He was going to completely do away with tag team wrestling. And obviously that never happened. But even then, I remember hearing that thinking, I don't agree with that at all. Tag team wrestling, if you've got enough tag teams that are over, like WWF did back then when they had the Outlaws, and later on they had Edge and Christian, the Hardys, the Dudleys, the APA. That was the last, to me, really great period of tag team wrestling. That late 90s, like 1999, 2000 period. They had a lot of great teams. If they can get back to that, I think it would be a huge feather in Triple H's cap, just like this new performance center, all the work he's done down in NXT. A lot of things are said about Triple H, but you can't take that away from him. If he can help kind of reinvigorate tag team wrestling, more power to him. I say go for it. Speaking of NXT, quick review here of this past week's show. I believe this was the final batch of tapings that they had done like a month ago. This was the final taping, and the new shows will start airing next week. And this was all wrestling. This whole show was all wrestling. I don't think there was one single backstage segment, not a backstage skit, nothing. So if you're big into wrestling, you'll probably like this show. If you're not, might want to skip it. The Ascension beat Corey Graves and Adrian Neville to retain their tag team titles. This was Graves and Neville's rematch after dropping the belts a couple of weeks ago. I don't know. You know, these two teams together, they just don't click for me. I find their matches largely boring. I don't even really know why. Both Graves and Neville were nursing storyline injuries. Neville to his knee. And so after tagging out to Corey Graves, when Graves tagged back in, Neville acted like, you know, hey, dude, what the hell? I'm still hurt. He ends up taking total elimination. I still call it total elimination. I don't even know what the Ascension calls it, but I still think of the Eliminators every time I see that move. So he gets pinned. Match is over now. Corey Graves is not happy that his partner lost the match for them. But then he plays it cool. Goes to raise his partner's hand. I think any real wrestling fan knows exactly what was coming. Graves hits the ropes, takes out his partner's knee. He lays a beaten down on Adrian Neville. So Corey Graves is a heel once again, probably for the better. These guys were going nowhere fast as a team. Tyler Breeze beat CJ Parker with his spinning heel kick. Guess who's on the house show loop this weekend with the main roster? That's right. Tyler Breeze lost to Justin Gabriel in Knoxville on Friday night. I heard they gave him the what treatment during his promo. Idiots. Corbin, one of our listeners, hopefully was not among those chanting what. He was there live. He said the building was half empty. Usually it's packed, so that's not good. Summer Rae and Sasha Banks beat Paige and Emma after Summer Did I really just call her Summer? Summer Rae. Yeah, there you go. She pinned Paige. Paige is the women's champion. She got pinned with Big Show's old final cut leg drop finish. It's the best way I can describe it. I have no idea what she calls the move. I think she has a name for it. I just don't know it. I guess that sets up Summer Rae as the number one contender for the title. At least I hope it does, because I'm not sure Paige has even defended her title one time since she won it. I guess the 30-day rule doesn't apply to NXT. Bo Dallas and Sami Zayn for the NXT Championship. This is a match that has been months in the making. It appeared that it was over early when Sami Zayn caught Bo Dallas with his Yakuza kick in the corner. Got the pin, ref counted three. But the general manager of NXT, John Bradshaw Layfield, he finally showed his face, first time since he was appointed GM. And he pointed out that Dallas's foot was on the bottom rope when the ref counted three, which is true. His foot was on the rope. JBL had a great line here when he said, "Referee, don't make me learn your name. Ring the bell and restart the match." So on they wrestled. They had a good match, but I've seen Sami Zayn have much better. In the end, he got pulled headfirst into an exposed turnbuckle, got pinned by Bo Dallas. So Dallas retains the title. All of the Bo Leavers out there are celebrating, all seven of them. And this was what I believe should be Tony Dawson's final show as a play-by-play announcer. He was let go after this taping. I hope it's his final one because he sucks. This was also the first show where they let Renee Young in the booth for the entire show, not just for the Divas match. She's good. Renee is good. She can get better in the role. I'm sure she will over time. I think it's just, you know, one of those things where you get used to it the more you do it. And preferably work with a play-by-play guy who's better than Tony Dawson, who can help lead her along. So that was NXT. Like I said, a very wrestling-heavy show this week. No shenanigans and backstage bullshit. And no backstage interviews either, which may explain why they had Renee Young out there on commentary for the whole show, because she is their backstage interviewer. So again, if you're really into wrestling, check it out. If you're not, you might want to skip this one and wait for next week. Hey guys, Solomonster here. As many of you know, I am a proud contributor to the Layfield Report, a website brought to you by Michael Cole and the longest reigning WWE champion in SmackDown history, John Bradshaw Layfield. There you'll find all the latest news and opinion from the world of professional wrestling, business, politics, sports, and more. Even better, you'll find me. You can show your support for my work there by scrolling down and finding the latest blog hit rankings on the right-hand side. Then, click on the name Jason Solomon, that's me, for a list of all my latest work. The more people who read these columns, the better, so be sure to share with your friends on Twitter and Facebook and help show your support for the Solomonster and the Sound Off. This week, I talk about why the World Heavyweight Championship has to go away, a unification plan for the two major titles, and the best place for it to happen. Read all about it exclusively on the Layfield Report. Go to layfieldreport.com right now. Tonight is TNA's big Bound for Glory pay-per-view from the Viejas Arena in San Diego, California. As I said earlier there, WrestleMania takes place tonight. Sure doesn't feel like the company's biggest show of the year. I don't know, maybe I'm one of the few who feels that way. I thought one of the ideas behind cutting down to only four pay-per-views a year is that it gives you more time to promote these shows. Shouldn't that be the idea? You know, the AJ Styles storyline has been playing out for a while now, but everything else just feels slapped together in the last few weeks. Even Kurt Angle didn't know that he would even be wrestling on the pay-per-view until 2 weeks ago. The original plan was Samoa Joe against Bobby Roode, but they changed their minds. They changed it to Angle versus Roode, and they just tacked Joe on to the Ultimate X match, which probably explains why they never bothered to explain how Samoa Joe can wrestle for the X Division title when there's a weight limit to that division. This is their first pay-per-view since June. The card should not feel slapped together at the last minute like that. Kurt Angle's TNA Hall of Fame induction, by the way, took place last night. Had around 200 fans in attendance, based on reports. Samoa Joe, Magnus, and Sting all gave nice long speeches honoring Angle, who then gave what was described as a short 5-minute speech. Sure sounds like somebody's saving their big speech for the WWE Hall of Fame. That's how it reads to me. Do you realize that Kurt Angle has now spent more years in TNA than he did in WWE? Can you even believe that? I realized that recently, and I had to check that twice because I didn't think that was accurate, but it's true. He's actually spent more time now with Impact Wrestling than he did on TV with WWE. And for him to do a speech, and you can't get more than 5 minutes out of that? Really? Come on. Anyway, here's the rundown for Bound for Glory tonight with predictions. We'll start from the bottom and work our way up. The pre-show, which airs live on Spike TV, by the way, at 7 o'clock this evening. There will be a gauntlet match involving Bad Influence, Chavo Guerrero and Hernandez, Joseph Park and Eric Young, and the Bromans, Robbie E. and Jesse Godders. The winners of that gauntlet match will meet James Storm and Gunner on the pay-per-view for the tag team titles. I'll go with Bad Influence here. Bad Influence should not be losing to the frickin' Bromans. I know that these guys practically lose all the time, but they're the one of the best things going on TNA television right now. They should at least win on the pre-show. So I'm going to go with Bad Influence. On the pay-per-view itself, we have a three-way for the Knockouts title. ODB defending against Brooke Tessmacher and Gail Kim. I'm going to go with Brooke Tessmacher here, just because she's with Bully Ray. She's with the world champ getting a push in the main event whenever he comes out. She looks great. She can wrestle. So why not put the title on her? I'll go with Brooke. James Storm and Gunner against the winners of the gauntlet, which I say will be Bad Influence. And unfortunately, I don't think that they would put Bad Influence over twice in the same night. So I'll go with Storm and Gunner retaining the titles. Kurt Angle against Bobby Roode. I'm going to go with Bobby Roode in this match. I think Bobby Roode is great. Kurt's great too, we all know that. But Bobby Roode has just been awesome. He was awesome when he was with Austin Aries. He's been awesome in this ego thing. Bobby Roode is just one of those guys who you just wish... You just wish there were bigger things for him in his career. You know, he's not even in the main event picture in TNA, let alone in any other organization. I just feel like he could be doing so much better. He could be doing so much more. But I'm going to go with him here, assuming that this is just the start of whatever feud that exists with him and Kurt, that they'll probably end up doing another match again on pay-per-view. Well, not even on pay-per-view. They only have four. Wherever they do the future rematch, I assume this is not the only time we'll see him and Kurt in the ring, like one and done type of thing. So I would go with Roode in this match here. Manic, Jeff Hardy, Samoa Joe, Chris Sabin, Austin Aries. Ultimate X for the X Division Championship. I'm going to go with Chris Sabin in this match. I like Sabin. I like heel Sabin more so than babyface Sabin. He's my pick in that match. Sting against Magnus. I'm going to go with Magnus. I think they're going to pull the trigger on a heel turn. It's coming. I don't know if it's coming tonight. And I don't know if it will even happen here in the match with Sting, or if they'll bring Magnus back out later, representing Dixie to attack AJ. I don't know how they're going to do it, but I think it's safe to say that Magnus has been pushed to the brink. He's been on a losing streak. He's not himself, and he will win this match because there really is no reason for Sting to win. Sting, at this point in TNA, I mean, if ever there was a guy who I think would be well-suited to just part ways, go to WWE, get the big payday, get the big match with Undertaker, and all that stuff. It's Sting. Sting has done everything there is to do in TNA. And now, in what could very well turn out to be his last big match for the company, because it's still up in the air if he'll leave at the end of the year and maybe sign a deal with WWE, or maybe he'll sign another deal to stay one more year with TNA. Nobody knows. But he should be putting guys over at this point. He can't even wrestle for the championship anymore. He should be putting guys over. If Magnus is the future of the company, as they keep saying on TV, heel or face, doesn't really matter. You got to put the guy over strong. He's been on a losing streak. The only reason, the only way this makes any sense is here on their biggest show of the year, on pay-per-view, the biggest match of Magnus's career. It culminates with him getting a big victory. That's the only possible payoff to what they've been doing with him these last couple of months on TV. So I'm going to go with Magnus. Main event is Bully Ray defending the TNA World Heavyweight title against AJ Styles. We know that Ethan Carter III, who we now know is Dixie Carter's nephew because they said as much on TV Thursday night, we know he's going to be on the pay-per-view because he said that on Thursday. He said he was going to make, he was going to make Aunt Dixie proud, is what he said. Gee, I wonder what that means. The only thing I can deduce from that, the only way that I think EC3 can make his Aunt Dixie happy would be to do something that ruins AJ Styles' chances of winning the championship. Or maybe he wins and then he attacks him after the match or something like that. I question getting this guy involved, let's say, in the world title feud right off the bat, if that is the plan. I have no idea if that's the plan. I'm just assuming. How else would he make Dixie happy other than by screwing AJ Styles? So I assume we'll see this Ethan Carter III involved here in some form or fashion. I've said for the longest time that AJ Styles going to win the Bound for Glory series, go on to the pay-per-view, be the man finally to unseat Bully Ray after all these months and take down Aces and Eights and win the championship and big celebration at the end of the show. The way things have gone recently and them playing up the fact that Ethan Carter III will be at the pay-per-view and all this stuff, I'm gonna go with Bully Ray. I just think that when this pay-per-view is over, there's a pretty good chance Bully Ray will still be the champion. And that may be their way of shocking people, everybody who just assumes AJ's going to win after all this build-up over the last several months. I'm going to go with Bully. I think Bully's keeping the title. I think they're going to do some kind of angle. They're going to introduce this new guy. However they're going to pull it off, they're going to somehow find a way to screw AJ Styles, keep the storyline going, AJ versus Dixie and all that jazz. I'm going to go with Bully. I think Bully's keeping the title. Impact was a taped show in Tulsa, Oklahoma. They taped two episodes of Impact. That's what aired on Thursday night, was the second episode. Apparently, they only had about 800 fans. I assume that's a paid number. So with freebies, the free tickets they give out, I would certainly hope there were more bodies than that in the building when they taped. But I don't know that for a fact. And actually, lots of upcoming tapings are in a state of flux right now for TNA. There were tickets for the November 21st taping in Baltimore that had gone on sale. Those tickets were taken off sale, so that taping is off. If you're one of the 150 people who already bought tickets, you can get a refund for your purchase. They pulled the plug on their December 5th taping in Chattanooga, Tennessee, and their December 19th taping in Arlington, Texas. On top of all of that, they just postponed their house show in Battle Creek, Michigan that was scheduled for November 1st to sometime in spring 2014. That's what the arena website now says. That was due to poor ticket sales. It appears the reason for the taping cancellations beyond poor ticket sales is that TNA is returning to the Impact Zone next month. They're going to tape about 6 weeks' worth of television in the time span of a few days. So they're going to have 6 weeks of TV in the can, and that may become the norm from now on. They barely have any house shows scheduled over the next couple of months before their UK tour at the end of January. It's kind of embarrassing for them to have to basically come crawling back home to Orlando and admit that going on the road was a failure, but they went through the same thing after they moved Impact to Monday nights. Remember that whole experiment? They went to Monday nights. They were going to take it head-to-head with Raw. Hulk Hogan was on with Joe Rogan on some UFC show. They specifically brought up, I think, WWE and Raw. It's going to be this big war, brother. I think that war lasted like a month, if that. I just wonder how they could go through all of these issues. Clearly, they're having money issues. You don't need to be a mole on the inside to know that TNA is having some money problems right now. Okay, you could just look at all the cancellations and the people that they're cutting and just everything that's going on. And I just can't understand how they could be going through this and still justify offering Hulk Hogan a ton of money to come back. They've made him an offer. I don't know if Hogan's coming back or not. But whether he comes back or not, they made him an offer. They want him back. Just making him a big offer, however much money it is, and you know for Hogan it has to be a pretty substantial amount of money, their priorities are just so screwed up right now. I can't, if I had to sit here and make a list of three reasons why TNA needs Hulk Hogan, why they cannot afford to let this guy go, they have to do everything in their power to keep him, I can't think of one. I can't think of one logical reason. And this notion, though, he's got a big name. Hulk Hogan. Everyone loves Hulk Hogan. They know Hulk Hogan. It could open doors for TNA. Yeah, the men's room door. So he can go in there and take a giant dump on TNA, which is basically what he's done. Bully Ray has been making the media rounds over the last few days, promoting Bound for Glory for TNA. He was on the Busted Open radio show, and I just want to read a few quotes from him here that I pulled because this is telling. And I've talked about this before on the show, but this is the TNA world champion, okay, one of their top guys, their reigning champ, saying this in an interview. He said, you know, in reference to Bound for Glory being the biggest pay-per-view in TNA history, tonight's event being that important for the company, he said, I don't know, is it? When we go out there as wrestlers and we see seats in the arena not full, it worries us. But we also can only go out there and do what we can, deliver the best possible in-ring product. Once we go through that curtain, that's when our jobs really start. I'm not the promoter of TNA. I don't work in the front office of TNA. I'm not responsible for the advertising of TNA. I'm not responsible for the product awareness of TNA. That's where TNA needs to grow and move forward as a company, with bringing their product to the masses so people will want to come to the shows. Yes, there are empty seats, but if you still concentrate on the in-ring product and you concentrate on what you see, it's still entertaining. People are going to sit back and say, wait, the ratings haven't gone any higher and there's low attendance at house shows. That's not Hulk Hogan's fault. That's product awareness. That's where I think our money can be spent a little bit better. Product awareness is number one. So I think if TNA can get their brand to the masses better, that's where you will see real change. That's from Bully Ray. That may be the smartest thing I've ever heard him say in any of these interviews that he's done. And Bully's a pretty bright guy. It comes down to product awareness and advertising. I say this months ago. I said that months ago. That the one area that TNA needs to focus on above all else, because they have the talent. They don't need new wrestlers because the guys that they have now can't deliver. If anything, they need new wrestlers maybe just to get some fresh faces in there, which I think could be one of the positives about this new Ethan Carter character. I don't know how good he'll be, but it's different. It's somebody new. But do they need talent? No, they've got a really talented roster. They have that already. What they need is more people to know what the hell TNA is. What they need is that when they have these house shows and they have these tapings, you have so many people who write into me, who write into these wrestling websites and on message boards, who live in some of these cities, and they find out, oh, TNA just canceled the show, and they say, TNA just canceled the show? I didn't even know they had one scheduled, or I would have gone. That's right in my town, or that's 15 minutes away from me. I didn't even know that TNA was coming to town. Because they don't do a good enough job promoting themselves. Which really isn't that much of a surprise, is it? Because remember, a few months ago, all of the people that either got cut or got let go from their PR department, there were people leaving left and right from their publicity department for a while there. I haven't heard any stories about their PR department in a while, so I don't know if they hired new people quietly and have a new team in place, or if they basically have one PR person now. It doesn't seem to really be a priority for TNA, and here you have your world champion saying the exact same thing, admitting that, okay, we have low attendance, there's a lot of empty seats, but you know what, if we go out there and we do our thing, people will still have fun, people will still be entertained, and that's true. I've been to a bunch of TNA house shows. I usually have a lot more fun at the shows than I do watching Impact on TV. It's usually a fun experience. But the problem is, when you have these shows, you have places where TNA will have 300 people. Ring of Honor does better numbers than that for their shows. And Ring of Honor is not on Spike TV every single Thursday night in prime time like TNA is. There's a disconnect there. There's something wrong there. They've got to get their house in order when it comes to that kind of thing. And it's actually really cool to hear Bully Ray admit that. People are looking at the wrong things here. Don't worry about Hulk Hogan and signing him and all this other bullshit. Focus on promoting your brand better. Do a better job. Hire more people. You know what? For the amount of money you will give Hulk Hogan, you could probably hire 10 new PR people in your publicity department. Hire people who know what they're doing, who have a good background, who can help you in the one area where you need help the most. And get the word out. And when you have shows, do a better job of advertising. Do a better job of promoting it. I mean, I'm not saying that alone is going to turn the whole company around, but it'll help. On Impact this week, Dixie announced she was offering a $50,000 bounty to the person who takes out AJ Styles so that he never makes it to the title match at Bound for Glory. This seems like a foolish business decision on many levels here. I think that TNA has much better uses for $50,000 these days. I also don't know why you would want to ruin the main event of your biggest pay-per-view of the year 3 days before that show, but that's Dixie. I think that's going to be my new catchphrase every time Dixie says or does something incredibly stupid. That's Dixie. Speaking of the $50,000, Richard on Facebook pointed out the full head of hair that Ben Franklin appeared to be sporting on one of those $100 bills Dixie was showing off. So if you're one of those wrestlers getting paid late by TNA, I would check your pockets and make sure you don't have any of that Dixie money in your wallet. You're liable to wind up behind bars. Bully Ray came out. He said that he would take the bounty and face somebody else at the pay-per-view. Magnus came out, very upset that Dixie would even put a bounty on AJ Styles' head. This all led to a match between he and Bully later in the show. Robbie E won a four-way over Christopher Daniels, Hernandez, and Eric Young to earn his Bromans team the final slot in the Gauntlet match on tonight's pre-show. They have no chance of winning, by the way. Backstage, Jesse Godders jumped AJ Styles from behind. He tried to collect that bounty, but he got laid out. AJ came to the ring, said he was flattered that Dixie would even put a bounty on him because she knew he was going to win. And after he does, he's going to make her pay. Hopefully with some real currency, not that fake Dixie money. He challenged anybody to come down and try to collect. Out came Nux and Garrett Bischoff. They worked over AJ for a bit before James Storm and Gunner made the save. This led to a match where Gunner beat Nux. Nux had called for Bully to come out and help him, but Bully Ray never showed up. This was after Bully Ray had told both of them earlier in the show, if you need me, all you got to do is call. And he never showed. So yeah, aces and eights, no pulse. They've got the shock paddles ready, just waiting for them to tag the toe. Samoa Joe beat Chris Sabin to tap out, or beat him with a tap out, I should say, with the Coquina clutch. This was just to build up the Ultimate X match at the pay-per-view. Austin Aries ran out. He delivered a missile drop kick to Joe. Jeff Hardy came out. He gave Aries a twist of fate, pulled out a ladder, started to climb. Sabin cut him off. Then out came Matic, who caught Aries and Sabin both with a crossbody block off the top of the ladder. By all measures, this match should steal the show at the pay-per-view. Hopefully it's not just a spot fest where they just do a bunch of moves and they actually have some kind of plan to make this different than all the other Ultimate X matches that we've ever seen. Maybe they all decide to just gang up on Sabin and all he does is do everything in his power to scurry away from them and try to scurry up to the top and grab the tie. I mean, it could be entertaining if they do something like that where they all gang up on Sabin and then one by one they turn on each other. I guess we'll see what they do. Backstage, Bad Influence attacked AJ Styles, who ended up fighting back with a fire extinguisher, and then he disappeared into the smoke like a ninja. We got another vignette for Ethan Carter III. EC3 announced he would be at BFG and was going to make Aunt D real proud. So there you go. Like I said before, he's coming in as Dixie Carter's nephew, and I suspect that that will be bad news for AJ Styles at the pay-per-view. Bully Ray beat Magnus. Referee Earl Hebner got bumped. Bully Ray grabbed the chain, but Sting ran down, stopped Bully Ray from using it. Hebner woke up. He told Sting to get the hell out of here, which gave Ray just enough time to deliver a low blow to Magnus and get the pin. Afterwards, Magnus was pissed at Sting for getting involved. Sting said he was only trying to help. He offered his hand, but Magnus just slapped it away. Kurt Angle came out to a great reaction. This was actually a good segment. We had Bobby Roode come out and bring up the fact that the two of them wrestled each other in the main event of Bound for Glory 2 years ago. Roode said that Angle opened his eyes that night, which it did. He turned heel on James Storm a couple weeks later and became the world champion. He embraced the hate, you might say. They ended up brawling. Angle put Roode in the ankle lock until Daniels and Kazarian attacked him. Roode put Angle in the crossface. Kurt even tapped out for him. Story being that Bobby Roode is intent on making Kurt Angle tap when it counts at the pay-per-view. This was pretty good stuff. Somewhere in here, in running down the card for Bound for Glory, they aired a graphic for the world title match. And talk about botches. They had the Twitter handle for Mickie James, who isn't even employed by TNA anymore, under AJ Styles' name. And this, mind you, was on a taped show. How do you miss something like that is what I want to know. It'd be bad enough if it was the wrong Twitter handle for somebody that actually still works for them. But for somebody who is no longer under contract, that just makes it funnier to me. Final segment was the contract signing for the Bound for Glory main event. I say, why even bother with a contract signing when one half of your main event isn't even under contract to TNA? I mean, really, how much weight is AJ's signature really going to have here? Dixie was out there smiling, seemingly okay with the fact that not one person successfully took her up on her bounty. Of course she's happy. She needs that money. She's relieved that she gets to keep it. Bully signed the contract, talked about how he beat Sting and made sure he would never again wrestle for the title, how he beat Chris Sabin and ran him right back to the X Division. Ouch. And talked about how he ran Hulk Hogan right out of the company. To me, that should make him the biggest babyface in TNA. I don't know what's wrong with these people. He called himself the Darth Vader of wrestling and said to Styles, "You ain't no Luke Skywalker." That's for damn sure. Styles then said that Bully Ray is not a legend, he's just a big dumb bitch. Them are fighting words. He said he knows he's in a must-win situation at BFG, and said he was going to be the most desperate man that Ray would ever step inside the ring with. That's assuming, of course, that Bully Ray never has a match with Bob Carter. Styles signed the contract. Bully Ray attacked him. Styles fought back. He used Dixie's bounty briefcase as a weapon. And then he threw her Monopoly money right at her. And it went flying all over the place. And he and Bully had a stare down to end the go-home show. So, are you excited for Bound for Glory? That's the big question. I hope you are. And believe me, so does TNA. They need to have themselves a really awesome show tonight if they want to build any momentum for themselves going forward. They really need something positive to build on amidst all the questions and all the bad news that's been going on out there. I hope for their sake that they can do that. I hope they can go out there tonight and have one of the best pay-per-views they've had since the early days of TNA when they were known for having great pay-per-views and great wrestling. That's what differentiated themselves so much from WWE and a lot of the BS that we had back then. You know, you could always count on TNA pay-per-views to give you some of the best matches that you were going to see all year. And hopefully they can go out there tonight and they can, you know, tear down the house and have a great show. I really hope that they can do that. For the sake of everybody who works there, if nothing else, they really need some momentum here. One last TNA item that actually could turn into a very big story down the road, and PW Insider was the first I saw to report this. Christian Garston is the name of the attorney who represented Daphne in her lawsuit against TNA. The whole thing where she was hurt and they claimed they would pay her medical bills and they never did, and I think they ended up firing her. That whole disgusting situation that just made TNA look so low rent and so bad, and the whole reason I went on that rant on episode 156 exposing, you know, all this bullshit that TNA, you know, their treatment of the knockouts and the whole Daphne situation. So Christian Garston is the name of the attorney who represented her. And he wrote something very interesting on his Facebook page earlier this week. And what he said was, this issue, that being employee versus independent contractor, is not dead. Daphne took it to the brink and farther than any other wrestler in history has been willing and or able to do. The courage she exhibited for over 2 years was simply amazing. I now have another wrestling client who intends to pick up where Daphne left off. Should get interesting. That's what the attorney said here. I'm thinking this client, who I assume is a former TNA wrestler, may well be Jesse Sorensen. It's a complete guess on my part, but if I had to take one, he'd be the first name that would pop into my head. This could be really bad news, not just for TNA, but for WWE as well. Back when Daphne settled her case with TNA, I made the remark that it wouldn't surprise me at all if WWE got word to them to get this stuff resolved quickly, because if she would have won and a judge determined that wrestlers are in fact being misclassified as independent contractors and they should be employees, it opens up a Pandora's box for the entire wrestling industry, not just for TNA. This is a case that doesn't just affect them. You know, if I'm WWE, this isn't something I want to be hearing. And this may sound a little extreme, but if I'm WWE, the best reason I could possibly have for buying TNA is to shut this stuff down. If they buy TNA and it ceases operation as is, I don't know how that works in terms of how, you know, any lawsuit may proceed if WWE essentially inherits those lawsuits. Even if that's the case, I think they would much rather be in a position to defend against it themselves than leaving it up to TNA lawyers. WWE has successfully defended itself against this sort of thing before. And, you know, if I'm them, I see if the Carters are interested in unloading this financial albatross at a reasonable price. You get the trademarks. You get the tape library with this network set to launch next year. They've got some great talent you could pick up, you could choose from, if you don't take everybody, which I'm sure they wouldn't. They've got plenty of talent to choose from. And most importantly, you shut this case down before it gets any further. Because if TNA ends up on the losing end of this for the money, it would probably end up costing WWE many, many, many millions of dollars. It might be cheaper for them to just buy them out, squash this, and move on. I mean, it would be terrible for the wrestling industry not having that second company for guys to find work. Whatever you may think of TNA, they have TV. They have plenty of talented guys that WWE would never touch because they're fools. The fact that WWE wouldn't be interested in an AJ Styles or an Austin Aries does not speak very highly, I think, to whatever their current hiring practices are. Plus, I happen to think that they are misrepresented as independent contractors. That's how I feel about it. If they were real independent contractors, they'd be free to work for whoever they want, and they wouldn't have the same kind of restraints they have when they sign a contract with WWE or TNA. I think the whole thing is bullshit, quite frankly. I'm just looking at this from WWE's perspective. If it's for sale, it may make sense to buy the thing unless Spike TV wants it. Spike likes the ratings that TNA does. I don't know that they would ever let TNA go out of business. They probably would make a play to buy it before that ever even happened. So if Vince McMahon came sniffing around, you know, things didn't end very well with Spike and WWE. There's no love lost there. I don't know that Spike would be willing to just let him have it, or that they would want his product on their station if, let's say, they wanted to keep Impact on the air as a separate show. I wouldn't get into a bidding war with Spike TV over it, but if Vince thinks they can get it, and I'm WWE, I at least sit down and talk to TNA about it. That's how serious this thing could end up becoming if this lawyer is as serious about it as he sounds. It's time for the mailbag. If you have questions, you can always email them to me at thesolemonster@gmail.com. You could also send in your audio questions, MP3 format only. Try to keep them more or less 30 seconds or so. And always include text of your question in the body of your email, in addition to the attachment. This week's audio question comes from Mohammed, all the way in Bahrain.
Hello there, Solemn Monster. My name is Mohammed, and I am from Bahrain. I wanted to ask you about why was Goldberg so over in WCW, and when he came in 2003 to WWE, he was not the same again, and what was the real reason, or what was the reason that he left WWE after a very bad match against Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania 20?
It's amazing all the questions I've gotten recently about Goldberg, and you know, now he's got this DVD out. The guy hasn't wrestled in almost a decade in a major promotion, and he seems as popular now as ever. Crowds are chanting his name every week on TV. Goldberg was never as popular in WWE as he was in WCW. I mean, I think the main reason for that really is because in WCW, he was at his peak. You know, WCW is where he built up the undefeated streak. That was his home. Just like, you know, people associate Steve Austin with WWF. If Austin had gone over to WCW, I don't know that he would have been as popular. It's a different place. It's a different set of fans. And in the case of Goldberg, when he left WCW, I think he was with WCW pretty much until the end, or mostly towards the end. So that would have been 2000 into the beginning of 2001. He didn't come into WWE for another 2 years. So there was this cold period where there was no Goldberg. And all of a sudden, when he reappears, it's in this company where he had never been before, in front of fans who, in some cases, probably had never seen him before. Or maybe they knew of him, but they didn't really follow him in his streak so much in WCW. Also remember, in WCW, they had the ill-fated Goldberg heel turn, which was the brainchild of Vince Russo. They turned Goldberg heel, which was a huge mistake. That didn't last very long, so that probably took some of the luster off him as well. There were a lot of different things that happened. He was never going to be the same Goldberg he was when he was at his peak, largely because, you know, the streak ended. That was probably the biggest reason. And time went on, the heel turn that didn't work, the company shut down, he went away. All of those things played a role in it. It probably didn't help in his second appearance on Raw the week, I think it was the week after he debuted, when they did that stupid backstage segment where Goldust put his wig on Goldberg's head. And I'm not going to blame that one brief backstage comedy bit, you know, for ruining Goldberg's run in WWE or anything like that. I just feel that right there was kind of a sign of what they should not have been doing with Goldberg. The guy just debuted. He came in full of all piss and vinegar, going after The Rock. He's this big dude who just goes out there and beats you up and leaves. You know, that should have been his gimmick. It should have been the same way WCW booked him, is the way he should have been booked in WWE. Keep him away from the comedy BS. I mean, that's one of the biggest pet peeves I have in wrestling even now. And it's not as bad as it used to be, but they rely on comedy so much. It's not Saturday Night Live. I don't care how much Vince McMahon wants to think it is. It's not SNL. It's not a variety show. That's not what Raw is. You know, you have your comedy guys like Santino and Kali, right? That's fine. You have some heels who want to crack jokes and all that. That's fine. But there are certain guys, you keep them away from the comedy. I think CM Punk is a guy like that. I don't think CM Punk would want to be involved in a segment like that. And Goldberg never should have had that wig put on his head either. That was a bad omen, I think, to really start his run. The second part of Muhammad's question, why did he leave after the match with Lesnar at WrestleMania 20? Very simple. His contract was over. He signed a one-year deal. He debuted the night after WrestleMania 19, and WrestleMania 20 was it. That was his year. He had no intention of signing another contract. He was generally unhappy, I think, with his run in WWE. Didn't think very highly of Triple H. He's certainly made that well known in interviews he's done. Nor do I think Triple H is a fan of Goldberg. He just was generally unhappy and didn't want to be there anymore. So he didn't sign a new deal. It was just that simple. And without there being another big promotion like WCW to go to, and TNA was around, but TNA was still in its infancy at that point. They certainly couldn't afford him. They couldn't afford him then. They can't afford him now. So he wasn't going to go there. There was nowhere for him to go. WWE was the only game in town, which goes back to what I said before on the lawsuit stuff and what a terrible thing it would be if, you know, TNA went away. Let's say if Vince bought them out or whatever. We can knock TNA all day and all night because they deserve it. But the fact is, it would be terrible for wrestling because you'd be right back to having one company. And that's not good for anybody. So where was Goldberg going to go? There was nowhere else for him to go. Not for the money he wanted to make. So that's why he disappeared. But again, I get questions all the time about Bill Goldberg. And now the talk about him maybe wrestling Ryback at WrestleMania. They're chanting his name on TV every week. They just came out with the Goldberg DVD. This guy's a hot commodity. He's been out of wrestling for almost a decade, and it seems like he's as popular now as he was then. Matt wrote in with this question. In light of recent events, what are the chances of Goldust getting his wish of having a match with his brother Cody at next year's WrestleMania? Would you book that match? Why or why not? If so, how would you have it play out, and do you think Cody or Goldust would be the better, more convincing heel? You know, I've been asked this question before, and my answer has always been that I didn't really have any interest in seeing that match at WrestleMania, but I've seen the way that fans have taken to Goldust. He's back now. He looks good. He moves around well for a guy who's been doing this as long as he's been doing it and has had the issues that he's had. And I'm more open to the idea now. And since I got this question, I've been giving this some thought. And here's how I would do it. You keep the titles on them for a few months, okay? Even beyond the Royal Rumble, you keep the tag belts on them. In the Royal Rumble match, Cody eliminates Dustin because it's every man for himself. Goldust isn't happy about it. He brings it up on Raw the next night to his brother, and Cody explains, you know, first, it's every man for himself, nothing personal. Second, I've been doing a lot of thinking here, and I love teaming with you and defending these titles. You're my brother. You're my blood. But I'm trying to really make a name for myself here. I've got bigger aspirations, and you know that. I want to do what you were never able to do. I want to become the WWE champion. I want to be the first member of the Rhodes family to hold that title. And this obviously cuts Goldust pretty deep. He understands Cody's ambitions, but obviously he's very dejected. He says things are going well with them as a team. Why stop now? You know, he wants to keep a good thing going. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. So suddenly we see some cracks in the armor start to show in their matches. They're not working as cohesively. They're having disagreements. And they finally lose the belts. Exactly when it happens and to who is irrelevant. It doesn't matter. They lose the titles. So this builds to a face-to-face confrontation in the ring with them a week later, where Cody wants to know what's wrong. You know, you haven't been yourself. What's going on with you? And they have it out. Just a really hot promo where Goldust just pours his heart and soul out, lets Cody know how he feels, how he can't believe he would be so selfish as to put himself and his own dreams over family. You know, what about my dreams? I could picture him saying, you know, Goldust can be yelling at him. What about my comeback story? And you could go two ways with this at this point. A, you can have Cody settle him down. His eyes are getting all red. He assures his brother, you know, family will always come first, so on and so forth. And when all seems well and Goldust is cool and Cody turns his back, you know, boom, Goldust nails his brother, beats the hell out of him, goes heel. Because to answer your second question, I would position Goldust as the heel here. I think he'd be much better in the role. And frankly, the goal here should be to get Cody over, not the other way around. The payoff should be the fan favorite winning, and that should be Cody at WrestleMania. It could be the biggest win of his career. So anyway, that's option A. Option B, instead of having Goldust turn on Cody and attacking him from behind, Cody can't settle him down. And Goldust grows even more upset and more angry during the promo. And he ends up either slapping or spitting right in his brother's face. And he walks away. And over the course of the next several weeks, Goldust makes it clear he wants to fight his brother at WrestleMania. You get kind of a Brett Owen vibe there. Remember, at first, Owen wanted to fight Brett. Brett said, no, absolutely not. Under no circumstances will I ever wrestle my brother. We all know how that turned out. So it would be kind of a similar thing. You know, he issues the challenge. He doesn't even come out as Goldust. He comes out as Dustin Rhodes to sell it even more, like it's a real personal issue. Cody doesn't accept right away. In the end, he will. And you have the match. And you can easily get another one or two compelling segments out of this between then and Mania. You can bring back Dusty. Bring back Dusty Rhodes to confront Goldust and try to talk some sense into him. Try to talk him out of the match like he's driving a wedge between the family. Just stop. You don't need to be doing this. So maybe he attacks his father to get more heat and Cody comes to the rescue. But that's how I would set this angle up. You can't just do the lame old tag team partners have friction angle because that's been done to death and these guys are family. You got to make it personal somehow. Think outside the box. The story should start with how selfish Goldust feels his younger brother is being when in reality, it's actually Goldust who's being the selfish one. He knows this may be his last shot. He doesn't want his brother to ruin it for him. We got a good thing here. Why are you going to go screw it all up for me? Why are you going to leave me twisting in the wind? What kind of brother are you? That's the story that I would tell. You get a hot undercard match for Mania out of it. Goldust gets the match with his brother that he's wanted for years now. Gets to put him over. Cody, in theory, is a bigger star coming out of it. And everybody wins. There's no bigger match that Cody could be involved in on that card next year without getting completely overshadowed. I think it's the best option for him. So you tell me, is that a match that you would want to see? Is that a match that you would pay for? I mean, WrestleMania is going to be bought and sold based on whatever the main event is. This is not going to be the main event. But, you know, would you be interested in that match and in that kind of build-up to a Cody Goldust match at WrestleMania? Sal writes in from Birmingham, Alabama, I saw the Royal Rumble 2013 buy rate and was surprised to see it 136,000 buys higher than last year's. I wasn't expecting it to be that big of an increase. What, in your opinion, does that tell you about CM Punk and his drawing power or value to the company? Obviously, we know The Rock had an impact, but what was CM Punk's? It doesn't tell me anything about Punk's drawing power. It tells me that people wanted to see The Rock wrestling for the WWE title. You know, Punk was champion for 434 days. There were plenty of other pay-per-views that didn't do nearly as well as the Royal Rumble did. It's no coincidence that that show did a good number. I mean, look at SummerSlam this year. I thought they did a hell of a job promoting that show around Cena vs. Bryan and Punk vs. Lesnar. Really, you could argue that Punk and Lesnar was the biggest attraction on that show. And this year's SummerSlam did a very disappointing number. It's not like Punk's some great pay-per-view draw. He's very valuable to WWE as a top player, and maybe in the ratings. You know, his segments with Paul Heyman of late have done very well, but believe me, that Rumble was all about The Rock. I think you could have put, maybe not anybody else, but you could have put a lot of other guys in that same spot against Rock for the title, and it would not have made a lick of difference. I mean, look at WrestleMania 27. They put John Cena with The Miz in the main event, and they did over 1 million buys. You think that was because Miz was such a strong opponent for John Cena? You think that was because Miz was such a great champion? It's because people thought Cena and The Rock might fight each other. David Menigo, the pride of Silver Spring, Maryland, one of our longtime listeners, writes in, did Bret Hart ever have creative control in WWE? If so, was the Montreal Screwjob a not-so-subtle way of telling Bret, you ain't no Hulk Hogan, F you and your creative control? Bret claims his creative control kicked in the final 30 days of his contract. The screw job had little to do with sticking it to Bret over creative control. It had everything to do with Vince not wanting Eric Bischoff to go out on Nitro the next night and announce that he'd gone ahead and signed the current WWF champion to a deal. I never bought into this idea that Vince was, you know, Vince McMahon really thought Bret Hart would show up on Nitro with the belt. Even if Vince had trust issues, you know, with what happened with Alundra Blaze and all that, Bret Hart's not Alundra fucking Blaze. You know, I never bought that as a concern of theirs. I do have to say, though, this idea that Bret floated in his conversation with Vince McMahon, he taped the whole thing and he aired it as part of his Wrestling with Shadows documentary, so it's out there. You can go listen to it for yourself. This idea that the match at Survivor Series would end in a DQ, and he'd come out on Raw the next night and give a nice speech, and he would forfeit the title. I know Vince okayed it. He okayed it, though, knowing he was going to screw Brett over anyway at that point. The mere fact that Brett would even suggest something like that, he had to be one of the most delusional guys on the fucking planet. Really, you're going to forfeit the title on TV instead of dropping it to somebody else? And look, I know that, you know, Brett had other ideas, like dropping it at a house show. He was going to drop it in a four-way, maybe to Steve Austin at the pay-per-view in December. But to even suggest forfeiting the belt without actually losing it, I mean, that takes some fucking balls. Oh, let me forfeit your title and then show up on the other guy's show as the uncrowned WWF champion. Why would you even suggest something like that? You drop it to somebody else on your way out. Let me forfeit the title and go out with some dignity. Fuck your dignity. I got a lot of sympathy for Brett over a lot of the shit that he had to go through there at the end with that whole fiasco, but that's not one of those areas where I have very much sympathy for him to suggest, let me just give you the belt so I don't have to lose it, and then I'll show up on Nitro the week after. It's just completely ridiculous. Ryan writes in, do you know what happened to the WWE Hotel and Casino back in 1999? Ah, yes. Did you know that WWE had plans to build their own hotel and casino? Because they did. It was the old Debbie Reynolds Hotel. Debbie Reynolds is a famous actress. WWE paid over $10 million for the property back in 1999. This was at their peak. This was the same year they went public. The idea is they were going to turn it into a wrestling-themed hotel and casino, something like 30 stories tall. I remember looking at the concept art they put together for it. You could still find the video on YouTube. The funniest thing to me was they had a shot in the video when they're going through all this 3D renderings of what the interior is going to look like, and they have a shot of what would have been Vince's Steakhouse. Yeah, I would have loved to have eaten in Vince's Steakhouse. They stripped out the interior of the hotel, and then they just decided, I guess it wasn't big enough, and they ended up selling it. I think I looked it up. They sold it for over $11 million, so they ended up making a small profit on the deal. They made about $1 million off of it, so they didn't lose money. Today, it's called the Clarion Hotel and Casino out there in Vegas, so if you're ever on Convention Center Drive, you want to check it out. They did open a restaurant/nightclub that same year in 99 in Times Square. I went there. I actually thought it was very cool. They had a merchandise store on the first level when you walked in. They had wrestler theme songs playing in the background. The restaurant was downstairs, or maybe it was upstairs. I think it was downstairs. I can't remember. But I thought the food was pretty good. You know, they taped some Sunday Night Heat episodes there. I was there for that. Eventually, they changed the name from WWF New York to The World, but it shut down a few years later. I still remember Rob Van Dam crushing Triple H's throat in that first Elimination Chamber match and thinking, uh-oh, that can't be good for RVD. And sure enough, even though he was one of the most popular guys on the roster, the very next month at the Armageddon pay-per-view, he wasn't even on the show. And they had him back at The World scarfing down hamburgers under this premise that he was hosting the Armageddon party. Call it whatever you want to. I think that was the first time he hadn't wrestled on a pay-per-view for them since he actually debuted in the company. I'm sure it was all just a coincidence, of course. I wanted to share this final email, not a question, but an email I got from Nathan. He says, I live in New Zealand. Every Monday morning I download the latest Sound Off, and it helps me get through monotonous university lecture gaps. You have a fantastic show, and I recommend it to all my friends who like wrestling. Recently, I discovered another group of wrestling fans within a class of mine, and it turns out they listen to your podcast as well. So even here in little old New Zealand, you have a growing fan base that I'm sure will only grow larger in time. I just think it's cool that I've got multiple fans in New Zealand, so I just wanted to mention that email. It's like a little cult, I guess, that we have down there. So very cool. Thank you to Nathan for sharing that. History has been made here! This week in wrestling history, this is a packed week here. A lot of things happened this week in history. And we go back 27 years ago, on October 14, 1986, one of the NWA's brightest young stars at the time, Magnum T.A., almost certainly a future world champion. Some would even say the man that might have helped give Hulk Hogan and the WWF a run for their money. Now, is that just people romanticizing about the guy's career? Maybe. We'll never know how far he would have gone. He got the name Magnum because he resembled Tom Selleck's character on the TV show Magnum P.I. He joined Jim Crockett Promotions in 1984, feuded with the Four Horsemen, had that famous I Quit cage match with Tully Blanchard, where he nearly drove a spike down into Blanchard's eye before Blanchard finally screamed, I quit. That was on that steel cage DVD that WWF did many years ago. I actually did not remember seeing that match, and when it was on the DVD, I watched it again, and I realized how awesome it is. In the months before his accident, T.A. feuded with Nikita Koloff, which were some of the best matches that he ever had. And then on that fateful night in Charlotte, in October of 86, he lost control of his Porsche while driving in the rain and wrapped his car around a telephone pole. And there were no drugs, no alcohol involved. They thought at first he may have been speeding, but later reports show that he was actually going the speed limit. It was just a freak accident. He was trapped in his car for over an hour before somebody found him. He was badly injured. His C4 and C5 vertebrae were destroyed. Nobody knew if he would ever walk again, let alone wrestle. And as it turned out, he was paralyzed on the right side of his body for many months. He had to walk with a cane. His in-ring career was over. But he did do some commentating for the NWA later on and even did some booking behind the scenes before getting out of wrestling altogether. All things considered, he made a remarkable recovery. He lives a normal life today outside of wrestling. He runs his own business. The loss of Magnum TA was a huge setback for the NWA. Nikita Koloff, who had been feuding with him at the time, was immediately turned babyface as a way to take his place, but it really wasn't the same. One of the biggest what-if stories in the history of wrestling. What would have happened had Magnum TA not had that car wreck? How might that have changed the course of history in terms of Jim Crockett Promotions and the health of that company? 14 years ago this week, on October 17, 1999, WWE's No Mercy pay-per-view, the first No Mercy pay-per-view in the U.S. Earlier that year in May, there was a UK-only pay-per-view called No Mercy, but this was the first U.S. version. China defeated Jeff Jarrett for the Intercontinental title in a Good Housekeeping match after striking him with a guitar. Jarrett's last WWE appearance ever was in this match on this pay-per-view. The Hardy Boys beat Edge and Christian in the first ever tag team ladder match that stole the show and really was the match that kicked off the TLC era that would follow the next year. Triple H beat Steve Austin to retain the WWF title in the main event after The Rock's interference backfired. This would lead to an Austin-Rock Triple H three-way, which would have been the first ever Austin-Rock Triple H three-way on pay-per-view for the title at Survivor Series the following month. But the match never took place, as Austin's neck was in rough shape, hence why they had to do the angle where he got run down by a car. Big Show took his place instead. This was Austin's final pay-per-view match for an entire year. It wasn't until No Mercy 2000 where he wrestled Rikishi in his comeback match. 13 years ago this week, WCW officially released Bret Hart from his contract, which led to Bret formally announcing his retirement from professional wrestling. He really had no choice but to retire. Doctors advised him against stepping back into the ring after a series of concussions he had sustained the previous December and January. It started, of course, with that mule kick from Bill Goldberg in their Starrcade match. Bret didn't realize how badly he was hurt. He kept wrestling. He suffered more little concussions in the weeks that followed. And finally, he realized something's wrong here and went and had the problem diagnosed. And that's when he found out how badly he really was hurt. 11 years ago this week, on October 20th, 2002, WWE holds another one of their No Mercy pay-per-views. Triple H beat Kane to unify the world and intercontinental titles in the blow-off to one of the worst angles in WWE history. I mean, first, poor Kane had to go through that whole You Murdered Katie Vick storyline, which would be enough to kill any other superstar dead in the water. And then to top it all off, Triple H beat the guy and took his title. The Reign of Terror sucked. I don't care what anyone else says. They actually killed off the Intercontinental title for a good 7 months before they finally brought it back. That shitty match aside, this pay-per-view had two excellent matches worth going out of your way to watch, and if you already saw them, watch them again. Kurt Angle and Chris Benoit beat Edge and Rey Mysterio to become the first ever SmackDown Tag Team Champions, one of the best tag team matches of the decade in WWE. No interference, no bullshit, just a straight-up awesome tag team match with four great workers. Main event was Brock Lesnar defending his undisputed title against The Undertaker inside Hell in a Cell. Undertaker made Lesnar famous in this match. That was his whole catchphrase back then, I'm going to make you famous. Well, he made him famous here. He put him over as the next big thing. Undertaker bled a gusher in this match, took the F5, got pinned. This was one of the better Hell in a Cell matches that WWE has ever done. These Hell in a Cell matches we have now, they really do lose a lot by not having the blood that these did. I know why they don't have blood anymore, and that's fine, but when you have this giant structure that's supposed to be so barbaric, it loses something by not having the red stuff. That's all I'm saying. This was also coming off a really shitty non-finish in Brock and Undertaker's match at the pay-per-view the month before. A lot of people, myself included, hated the finish of that match at the time. It was basically they were fighting too much. They were punching. The referee was trying to break them up. They, you know, wouldn't stop hitting each other. They shoved the ref down. The ref basically disqualified both of them. The crowd booed the hell out of that finish. At least we had a finish, but it just wasn't a very good one. Still better than the Battleground finish, though, because we actually did have a decision. And also, both guys weren't knocked out and left for dead by somebody who wasn't even in the damn match. You know, but I bring this up because they followed it up with Undertaker, you know, really putting Brock over in this match here, to where it almost excused the finish from the month before. If they put the title on Daniel Bryan next weekend at Hell in a Cell and they have Orton put him over real strong, it still won't excuse that awful finish at Battleground, but it'll help. You know, it'll help Daniel Bryan a lot, I think, if they can go out there and steal the show and have a great match like these two guys did. 10 years ago this week, on October 19, 2003, yet another No Mercy pay-per-view. I promise this is the final one. Vince against Stephanie McMahon was one of the feature matches on this pay-per-view, where if Vince McMahon lost, he would give up control of the company. And if Stephanie lost, she would have to step down as the general manager of SmackDown. The Maryland State Athletic Commission had a rule that prohibited matches between a male and a female. WWE knew about this in advance. They paid the fine so they could do the match. And it was rough, too. You know, Vince wasn't holding back on his daughter. He was choking her out with a lead pipe at one point and hitting her with it. You'd never see something like this these days. Never in a million years. And I say good, because this match just made me very uncomfortable. So did the angle where Austin and Triple H beat the hell out of Lita and the Hardys. But I liked that one because it was such an awesome way to get heat on Austin after he turned heel. People didn't want to boo him. How could you not boo Steve Austin after he just beat the crap out of the Hardy Boys and Lita? So I'm actually okay with that. This, though, this match, I don't know if this match really had to happen. I don't know what the hell kind of purpose this served other than some sick fetish that Vince must have. Stephanie lost. She ended up off television for 2 years. We would not see her again until the Raw Homecoming show when they went back to USA Network. The other reason for this was because she was getting married in real life to Triple H the week after they were going on their honeymoon. Match ended when Linda McMahon threw the towel in for her daughter, and afterwards Vince pie-faced Linda to the ground and made out with Brock Lesnar's wife. I should say Brock Lesnar's future wife, Sable. If Vince had made out with Lesnar's wife while they were married, I'd be recapping the death of Vince McMahon this week in history instead. 8 years ago this week, on October 17, 2005, on an episode of Monday Night Raw, Stone Cold Steve Austin wanted answers from the McMahons as to why Jim Ross was fired as the lead announcer. Stephanie came out. She informed Austin that he could wrestle Jim Ross's replacement, the coach, Jonathan Coachman, at their Taboo Tuesday pay-per-view. And if Austin won, JR could have his job back. Now think about this for a second, okay? Let's stop here. Steve Austin, one of the biggest stars of all time, retired since 2003, hadn't wrestled a match since WrestleMania 19, and their grand plan for his comeback was to put him in a match on the lowest of all the B shows they had on pay-per-view at the time against an announcer. And he was going to lose. The idea was that he wouldn't even win because JR wasn't getting his job back. So as if all of that wasn't ridiculous enough, they wanted to have Austin lose his first match back to an announcer on a throwaway show that nobody was going to buy. I can't imagine why Austin ended up not doing the match. I believe the story at the time was that he told Vince McMahon he hurt his back moving furniture at home and couldn't wrestle. WWE was not happy. They had to scramble to change the match. Instead, they put Dave Batista in Austin's spot. Batista was the World Heavyweight Champion at the time. And here he was wrestling the coach on pay-per-view. Vader and Goldust, of all people, were brought in by Coach in storyline as his backup. Talk about random. Vader hadn't even been on WWE television in 7 years and was grossly overweight. So overweight that the night he and Goldust returned on Raw to attack Batista, while exiting the ring, his massive girth carried him backwards, and in one of the more embarrassing moments in Raw history, Vader fell down right on camera. So those two were a non-factor at the pay-per-view. Batista disposed of them both. He beat the coach. No mention of the JR stipulation at all. He would eventually get his job back, but only because they were not happy with the job Joey Styles was doing. 4 years later this week, on October 16, 2009, this is rather timely, with Jim Ross tweeting a photo of himself with Shane O'Mac in New York City. Shane McMahon resigned from World Wrestling Entertainment. In a statement, Shane said, "Having been associated with this organization for the majority of my life, I feel this is the opportune time in my career to pursue outside ventures." And that's exactly what he did. He became the CEO of a company called China Broadband, which provides cable broadband services. He's no longer the CEO today, but he is still part of the company. The stories at the time regarding his departure centered around disagreements with his father. You know, Vince was constantly yelling at him, and basically Shane just couldn't take it anymore. He got fed up, and he just wanted to break away. He said, I'm getting too old for this shit. I'm going to go do something else. How much of that may have been the realization that Triple H and Stephanie were gathering more power, and he likely would not have any real position of power when it came to a succession plan? Who knows? You know, but it sure seemed like Shane was being groomed to be the man to take over when Vince stepped aside. That is, until Triple H came into the picture. 3 years ago this week, on October 18, 2010, WWE launched its memorable Stand Up for WWE campaign. Remember that? They asked fans to help defend the company against all the bad publicity they were getting as Linda McMahon ran to become senator in the state of Connecticut. Vince McMahon even recorded a video plea where he said WWE was facing negative and inaccurate attacks by members of the press. And he strongly encouraged members of the WWE universe to stand up for the company by writing letters and complimentary posts on Facebook and YouTube testimonials. Yeah. This was also around the time they flooded all of their shows with these nauseating ads about how great they are and how much everybody loves working for WWE and all of our charity work and Make-A-Wish and so on. I mean, my God, how could you not like WWE? We put smiles on people's faces. So, yeah, that was 3 years ago this week. 2 years ago this week, on October 16, 2011, TNA held its Bound for Glory pay-per-view. Hulk Hogan's final match to date was on this show. He wrestled Sting. Hogan entered as the heel. He took more bumps than he had any right to, especially with his back in the condition it was in. Sting won with the Scorpion Deathlock. Then Sting was attacked after the match by Immortal. Sting pleaded with Hulk Hogan to help him, and this is where Hogan did this great babyface turn. He was covered in blood, hulking up. He ripped off his shirt. The place went nuts. It was probably the greatest Hulk Hogan moment in his entire TNA run, which naturally only really served one purpose, that being to get Hulk Hogan over. It's not like anything he ever did behind the scenes ever made a lick of difference for that company. He got rid of the six-sided ring. I think that's about it. So he and Sting cleaned house, and then they embraced, and they stood tall at the end. 1 year ago this week, on October 14, 2012, also TNA's Bound for Glory pay-per-view, Rob Van Dam beat Zema Ion to become the new X Division champion. Bobby Roode and James Storm had a really awesome bloody brawl to blow off their feud in a match that at one point had been pegged as the main event of Bound for Glory. The whole thing was James Storm fighting his way back, right? The road to redemption. He was going to face Bobby Roode in the main event, win the championship. Didn't quite work out that way. These guys, they didn't open the show, but they were practically curtain jerkers on this show, and there was no title on the line. They switched the title to Austin Aries over the summer. It really killed whatever momentum James Storm had going for him. He really hasn't been the same since. Aces and Eights beat Sting and Bully Ray to gain full access access to TNA. This was where they unmasked D-Von as a member of Aces and Eights, and Bully Ray acted shocked, I tell you, Bully Ray was, to see his brother-in-arms, part of this rebel faction. Even the crowd chanted, "This is awkward," as Sting and Bully and D-Von all stood around together. And in the main event, Jeff Hardy pinned Austin Aries to become the new TNA World Heavyweight Champion. That was 1 year ago this week. And here we are tonight, Bound for Glory 2013. Card looks quite different than it did a year ago. Some faces aren't even in the company anymore. And hopefully they'll go out there and they'll have a bang-up show. So that's This Week in Wrestling History. If you have questions for the mailbag, questions for the Sound Off in general, you can email them to me, thesolomonster@gmail.com. I do read everything you guys send me, even if it takes me a while to get back to everybody. So please email me there. Follow me on Twitter, @Solomonster is my handle. And you can friend us on Facebook, facebook.com/TheSolomonster, all one word. We have a official Facebook group. Type in Solomonster Sounds Off. It's a closed group. You have to apply for membership, but we are approaching 600 members, so please join us there as well. Like us. We have a separate fan page on Facebook as well. And you can download the free Sound Off app if you have a Google device in the Google Play Store on your Android. It is free. You can stream the latest episode of the Sound Off and past episodes as well. So please do check us out there. Of course, as always, you can subscribe in iTunes. You can leave us a review there. That always helps out the show. Subscribe to us on YouTube. We're all over the place. You can subscribe on YouTube. The Solomonster, all one word, is my username. Like I said, we have Sound Off extras that go up. These are bonus episodes of the Sound Off that are not numbered. But usually I'm reviewing something. It could be a book. We have a Bob Holly book review up there. 45-minute, very thorough review for Bob's book, which is actually well worth taking a look at that. I have a review up now for Triple H's new DVD, also about 45 minutes. Go very in-depth into it. The pros, the cons, the good, the bad, everything in between, whether or not it's worth a purchase. And my Battleground pay-per-view review from earlier this month. There may be one for Hell in a Cell next weekend. If you subscribe on YouTube, you'll be informed when new videos go up. And believe me, there will be new videos going forward. So subscribe to us there. You can make a PayPal donation on thesolomonster.com. Buy a shirt in our Sound Off Superstore. There's a lot of different ways you could support the show. And to everybody who has donated or bought a shirt or left a review, and can certainly do so again, I say thank you, because it's you guys that keep the show going. Next weekend is going to be our annual Halloween edition of the Sound Off. It's my favorite episode. I love Halloween so much. And Halloween falls on a Thursday this year. It's not this week. It's the week after. But we'll do the Halloween show next weekend. That'll be episode 298 on our march to 300. So until then, be well. Stay safe. Of course, we'll have a full Hell in a Cell preview next weekend as well. Until then, take care, guys.
You've been listening to the Solomonster Sounds Off, giving you the good. The bad.
Raw is now 3 hours every Monday at 8.
And the ugly.
Hello. Why does Jerry Lawler insist on telling us that we are just getting started? What the fuck have I been watching for the past 2 hours?
Well, mostly the good.
I don't want to K-fab you.
You're going to K-fab me?
Solomonster Sounds Off.
Since 2007 on thesolomonster.com, iTunes, and Stitcher Radio, The Solomonster Sounds Off.